Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The jury in the retrial of Dublin firefighter Terence Crosby, who's facing charges of rape, is currently deliberating, having heard closing arguments in the case, which is being heard in a Boston courthouse. Terence Crosby is accused of raping a woman in Boston on St. Patrick's Day weekend of 2024. He denies the charges. Well, journalist Susan Zollkind is covering the case for the Irish Times, and she joins us now. Susan, thank you for being with us this morning. This, as I say, is a retrial. It's Terence Crosby's second trial, and we did speak to you in the summer during his first one. Will you remind us what happened during those earlier proceedings and how we find ourselves at this point now?
Yes. So it ended last time in a hung jury. The jurors deliberated for 22 hours and they couldn't make up their minds, right? In America, they have to reach a unanimous verdict. And the jurors in the first case were not able to do that. They heard from the complainant the first time. They heard from Crosby the first time, much like we have this time around. But there are a few differences in how the cases have been tried and what was revealed in the second trial.
Okay, well, you were there for all of it, and the retrial began on Monday of this week. So take us through what happened in court.
So we heard initially from the state, who said that Mr. Crosby was out with his colleagues, members of the Dublin Fire Brigade. And the complainant, a 29-year-old attorney, was also out with her colleagues, attorneys, and they all met at the Black Rose Bar. Now, the extent of their interactions at the Black Rose Bar have been debated. But what is clear is that the complainant actually met Mr. Crosby's colleague, Liam O'Brien, at the bar and went home with him or to the hotel around the corner where he was sharing a hotel room with Mr. Crosby. Now, the complainant says that she never met Mr. Crosby, that she and Mr. O'Brien had consensual sex, and that he then began to snore and spread out on the bed. She went to the bathroom. She turned the bathroom light on. And when she returned, she crawled into the other bed. She didn't know that Mr. Crosby had a roommate. She says she fell asleep and she woke up to another man who she says was not Mr. O'Brien actively raping her. Now, she says he pinned her down in the bed. He spoke to her. He told her that his friend, Mr. O'Brien, was a loser, that she wanted this. And she says she was able to maneuver herself off of the bed, collect her clothes while he chased her around the room a bit, go to the bathroom, take a beat, and then escape out the door. Now, Mr. Crosby says that he met this woman briefly at the bar, along with Mr. O'Brien, that he actually returned to the room first, so he would have met her at the room, then left. He says that he sat outside of the hotel for 2 hours. He returned. He says the light was off when he returned, that he couldn't hear anything, and that he crawled into bed. And a few moments after that, he heard a woman rummaging around the room, that she left, and he didn't have any interactions with her at all. He says he didn't talk to her. He says he didn't touch her. He says that she was never in his bed. Now, the woman, as soon as she left, she messaged, she text messaged a friend making allegations about what happened to her. She says she woke up and there was somebody raping her, telling her that she liked it. She went home, changed her clothes, brought those clothes that she was wearing to the hospital 1 hour later and reported the assault. Mr. Crosby's actions after the assault have also been called into question. Detectives questioned him a day after the reporting, and detectives say that he asked them questions about what did she mean by rape? Was she saying that somebody pinned her down? And also introduced reasons why, and it gets kind of explicit here, perhaps his DNA could have been found on her. Mm-hmm. That perhaps that she, it's a bit rude, but that perhaps there's another reason there as well.
Okay.
And again, these are two very different accounts, and alcohol also plays a big factor in all of this as well.
Well, can we talk about the DNA evidence in general terms? I mean, does it play a role, and has it played a role in what you've heard in court in this week, since Monday of this week?
Yeah, so DNA has played a role in both trials. I would say, so the story with the DNA is that DNA evidence was collected from the complainant, right, in intimate areas. And Mr. O'Brien, the consensual partner, was found as a contributor. But they also ran some more sensitive testing, and they found out that there were two male contributors. And these were DNA evidence collected, again, from intimate areas of the complainant. So they see two distinct male profiles. Now, the state saying that this matches the complainant's account that she had consensual sex with one partner and then was raped by somebody else. But the defense says that, look, the DNA does not identify Mr. Crosby. And I think in the second trial, we have seen the defense be able to undercut the DNA evidence to a greater degree before. It does seem like the defense attorney in this case had been studying up on his science textbooks. He introduced the idea that there could be transfer DNA, so that somebody's DNA could get on you through an intermarry another person, like if you shake somebody's hand and then you shake somebody else's hand, or that there could be contamination, mm-hmm. right, that contamination occurs.
Susan, video evidence then as well has played a role in this trial, hasn't it?
Yes. So video evidence has played a role for both sides. So the defense was able to use video evidence of the complainant interacting with Mr. Crosby at the Black Rose. She says that she never met him. She also could not remember Mr. O'Brien's first or last name or what he was wearing. Again, the issue of alcohol consumption plays a role. But the state says that the video evidence also supports her account, the crucial details of her account, in that it shows Mr. Crosby entering the room about 20 minutes before she then left and immediately reported a rape.
Now, Terence Crosby, I know from our conversation the last time, had many supporters in the court. Was it the same over the course of this week?
His supporters have only grown the second trial. His wife has been there throughout with a group of gentlemen. And for closing arguments, I'd say that the courthouse was packed. Now, the complainant has not sat through the trial. I do think she was accompanied by one individual for closing arguments initially. She had apparently sat through these proceedings alone.
And has Terence Crosby been in custody since he was charged with this?
Yes. So part of the story involves a potential flight risk, right? So after Mr. Crosby was questioned by police, he was initially in town with a group of fire brigade members to march in the St. Patrick's Day parade on a Sunday. He was questioned on a Saturday. He told officers he'd stick around, but he booked an early flight home. He got on the plane and he was actually pulled off of the plane and arrested. Now, the state has used this as evidence to say he was caught red-handed. The defense says that he was scared about these big allegations. He had returned to his hotel room and he was concerned that his hotel room had been tampered with. But this is part of the reason why his bail has been kept so high. So he has been behind bars. He was not initially granted bail. He's been behind bars since his arrest in March 2024.
And the last time then that we had the deliberations, I remember you telling us that the jury came back with questions for the judge, but they were directed every time that they would have to have a unanimous verdict on this case. At what stage are the deliberations now, and have there been the same level of interaction between the jury and the judge this time round?
That's a great question, and there hasn't been. We haven't heard a peep out of them, right? So in the lead up, if there's perhaps another hung jury. They've been out for a little over 10 hours. Last time they were out for 22 hours. But the jurors usually come to the judge and tell them that they're at an impasse. The judge then gives instructions to jurors that they are the most intelligent, impartial jurors that they could have in a case. And there's no one more qualified to come to a decision there. And that it is desirable that they come to a decision. But we haven't heard anything out of this jury yet. We haven't heard any questions from this jury. And so the judge has not kind of given them the additional instructions that might lead up to a hung jury as of yet.
If that happens again, if there is a hung jury in this case for a second time, what happens then, Susan?
I mean, we could be seeing this case play out all over again.
So it would go to a third trial?
It could. I mean, it would be up in some to some degree to the complainant if she was willing to testify all over again. It would also be up to the defense. Would they perhaps be open to taking a deal? This case is tricky when it comes to a deal and reaching any sort of compromise because he's only charged with one count of rape. I say only, it's a very serious charge of rape. It reaches 20 years, but often with assault cases, you have a series of lesser charges that sometimes help to make a compromise for jurors or in plea agreements. But this is one serious charge that carries a long sentence.
Okay, Susan, we will leave it there as deliberations continue in that case in Boston. Susan Zollkind is reporting on the case for the Irish Times. And if you have been affected by any of the details raised in that conversation, you can find support at rte.ie/helplines.